Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And today I wanted to talk about one of the less well-known consequences in the aftermath of the Spanish Civil War for the volunteers who fought in the international brigades, particularly volunteers from the USA. The way in which the returning volunteers from the Lincoln and Washington brigades were treated by the FBI, particularly in the 1930s, 1939, and during the war years, and then after, in the immediate beginnings of the Cold War, tells you an awful lot about the operating, the ideological operating of the US state, particularly the justice and police arms of the American government, and what the ideological assumptions of FBI men and obviously people like J. Edgar Hoover clearly were. Now, most of what I'm going to talk about today is drawn from Adam Hochschild's Spain in Our Hearts, Paul Preston's The Spanish Holocaust, and, of course, Richard Baxall's Unlikely Warriors, the three books that are easy enough to access on the topic of the Spanish Civil War. There's also Anthony Beaver's History of the Spanish Civil War, which is pretty good, and a variety of other titles by Paul Preston, who really is the kind of the go-to guy on this subject. The withdrawal of the international brigades began in 1938. The end of their involvement over 2.5 years in Spain was during the kind of the final year of the Republic, as it collapsed under the nationalist onslaught backed by Hitler and Mussolini, and inadvertently kind of backed by the British and French and American arms embargoes to the Republic, particularly the USA, decided to sell arms to the Republic, the outcome might have been considerably different. Roosevelt in 1939 looked back as Spain fell to Franco and saw it really is one of the kind of the key foreign policy errors he had made throughout the 1930s, and the litany of horrors inflicted on Spain by Franco, not just during the war, but once he was victorious, the execution of prisoners, the persecution of entire communities that had known to have Republican leanings, and the wave of mass killings, extrajudicial mass killings that engulfed Spain following the victory over the Republic are one of the less discussed war crimes and monstrosities of the 20th century, but certainly Paul Preston's book, The Spanish Holocaust, he doesn't take the title lightly, and there's a very interesting discussion at the start of the book about the uses and abuses of the term Holocaust, and there is good reason for employing it when talking about Franco. The international brigaders, the British, American, Canadian, Polish, German, French, and others, who marched through Madrid in a final act of defiance before they left, were cheered by tens of thousands of Spanish people. They were given an emotional farewell as men and some women who had come to Spain to risk their lives to stop fascism in its tracks. One theme that consistently comes up in the memoirs of international brigaders is the sense of immense guilt and shame that they felt in leaving Spain in 1938, saying farewell to the Spanish people they knew, and waving a farewell to strangers who were cheering for them, knowing what awaited the citizens of the Spanish Republic and the horrors that would be wrought upon them by Franco when the Republic finally fell. Adam Hochschild writes in Spain in Our Hearts that when 148 returning American volunteers arrived at New York on the line of Paris on December the 15th, 1938, awaiting them seemed to be, in the words of Lincoln commander Milton Wolfe, more cops than people. Police on foot and on horseback kept a throng of well-wishers a good distance from the French Line Pier on West 48th Street, and immediately came other signs of the hostility with which the government would treat these veterans for decades to come. Men who a year or two earlier had seen their American passports confiscated by André Marty. A point here. André Marty was the Stalinist quartermaster general of the international brigades, a man with a very poor reputation, a deeply divisive and suspicious and highly sectarian figure who, it is alleged, had suspected Trotskyites executed and confiscated the passports of international brigaders who came across the Pyrenees to Spain. Many of those passports, interestingly, wound their way up in the hands of Soviet intelligence, and were used for setting up legends, undercover identities for sleeper agents and other Soviet agents infiltrating Western countries. So those passports were like gold dust. Anyway, I continue. Men who a year or two earlier had seen their American passports confiscated by André Marty now had their new passports issued grudgingly by US consulates in Europe confiscated at dockside. One volunteer asked an official when he would get his back. Never, I hope, was the reply. Behind the police lines, the crowd of friends and family members in winter coats, including the Brighton Beach Community Centre Drum and Bugle Corps, were a pale echo of the weeping, cheering hundreds of thousands who had lined the parade route to Barcelona 7 weeks earlier. Now, it's worth remembering that these were men who had seen the vast majority of their comrades killed. A fairly slender number of veterans survived to return to the USA. And the war that they had been fighting had been largely a mystery to the majority of American news followers. Most people didn't know about the Spanish Civil War, or if they did, they didn't know that there were Americans and other international fighters there participating on one side. And it was difficult to explain to those who weren't really quite well versed in the entire subject that the American government wasn't at war in Spain. And even more difficult still to explain that if that was the case, why it was there were Americans fighting in Spain and why they had volunteered for such hardships. For black volunteers in the Lincoln Battalion, there was a rude reminder of American racism when they returned home. There were still signs in windows saying no blacks in boarding houses and hotels and bars, and this came as a shock, particularly because there had been no discrimination where they had been garrisoned in Spain. The Republic was a welcome break from racist attitudes, and of course the Lincoln and Washington battalions of the International Brigade were profoundly anti-fascist and anti-racist in every conceivable way. As with the British battalion, when the American Washingtons and Lincolns returned home, by this point, in point of fact, there was really only the Lincoln Battalion left. Most of the Washingtons were killed or been merged into the Lincolns. When they returned, there were only a few months left of European peace, less than a year. And it was the opportunity that many sought to continue fighting fascism. Some had an expectation that America might join a European war in 1939. Obviously, this doesn't occur until the end of 1941. And the fact that most of the American volunteers in Spain may have in part been recruited by the Communist Party of the USA, but they certainly, the majority weren't Communist Party members, meant that one of the kind of great ideological dilemmas in 1939, the Nazi-Soviet Pact, was not an issue. There were communist parties across Europe and in America that did not quite know what ideological line to take on the Second World War, as now that their patron and master Stalin had formed a non-aggression pact with the chief protagonist, obviously Adolf Hitler. Normally, communists and anti-fascists in the fellow traveller movement would have united in condemnation under Hitler and hoped for an alliance between Western democracies and the Soviet Union.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
To destroy Nazism. However, this doesn't occur, and instead this strange Faustian pact between Stalin and Hitler emerges instead. And ideological certainties take 2 years to restore themselves in the summer of 1941 with the invasion of the Soviet Union during Operation Barbarossa. The fact that the USA became involved after 1941 in the Grand Alliance with Great Britain and the Soviet Union and engaged in a global struggle against fascism, in which 15 million American soldiers, sailors, marines, and airmen fought, was slightly kind of immaterial when it came to judging those that had previously struggled against fascism. Those who had gone to fight in the Spanish Civil War, who had done it under their own auspices and not been sent by any order from the American government, were viewed with immense suspicion during the Second World War and afterwards. And in the new climate of the Cold War, the question as to who had been ideologically turned or who had been infected with the scourge of communism, or which international brigaders had secretly been Soviet agents and had returned to bring communism back to the USA. All these wild flights of paranoiac fantasy that people become gripped with from time to time. These become very relevant. And one politician, Martin Dice, the rather kind of imposing Texan who had been a professional kind of red baiter, became the first chair of the House Un-American Activities Committee. And Dice said in passing to one of his colleagues that if you were against Hitler and Mussolini before December the 7th, 1941, you were a premature anti-fascist. And this meant that the struggle against fascism was only legitimate in the eyes of the House Un-American Activities Committee when it was sanctioned by the US government. Anything prior to that, this sort of voluntarism of the international brigades, was somehow suspect, and it could only be suspect because it was associated with communism. One of the best-known medics in the Lincoln Brigade, Dr. Edward Barsky, was a high-profile victim of McCarthyism. When he returned to America, he became chair of the Joint Anti-Fascist Refugee Committee, which lobbied against Franco and provided aid for those who had fled Spain, the thousands of Spanish people who had crossed the Pyrenees into France and were living in refugee camps there. The House Un-American Activities Committee summoned Barsky and ordered him to testify, demanding that he name all who had received help from the organisation, from the refugee committee. Of course, Barsky refused to do so, and he refused to do so for a particular reason. If he named the names of Spanish people who had been helped, these were Spanish people who, following the fall of France, had probably been sent back to Spain or had been interred somehow in France. After the end of the Second World War, Spanish fascism continued quite on its own accord. Franco isn't swept away in 1945. He dies an old man in 1974. So there was still questions of vulnerability. They, by naming those helped by the committee, you could be sealing their fate. In 1950, Barsky was given 6 months in federal prison for contempt of Congress. When he got out, he found that his license to practice medicine was also suspended for another 6 months. He fought against this all the way to the Supreme Court, and when this was heard by Justice William O. Douglas, one of the justices who dissented against the persecution of Barsky, even though the court ruled against him, Justice William O. Douglas said, "When a doctor cannot save lives in America because he is opposed to Franco in Spain, it is time to call a halt and to look critically at the neurosis that has possessed us." The climate of fear in McCarthyite America was significant, not just for former members of the International Brigades, but for people in all sorts of different professions and walks of life. And amongst the international brigaders, it saw men get rid of any memorabilia they'd brought back from Spain, any photos, postcards, letters, diaries, papers, that kind of thing. They tend to burn them as quickly as possible. And some of these were men who had also now served in the Second World War and who had returned, taken advantage of the GI Bill and the loans that were available to get an education and set up businesses. So some of the former international brigaders were quite established in their careers and had a lot to lose. Now, I'm not suggesting that life is any difficult if you haven't got lots to lose, but you see my point. Jack Penrod from Alabama, became a teacher of English at the University of Florida. He burned his memoirs and said, and I quote, "At one time I didn't know whether they might actually get a search warrant to search our house." For the Americans who returned to Spain, the fighting was over. The Republicans in Spain suffered an appalling fate. 20,000 were, at least 20,000 were executed after the Franco victory. A larger number probably died in the overcrowded prisons. In 1940, for example, 270,000 convicted prisoners were crammed into cells built only for 20,000. There were another 100,000 were in jail awaiting trial. And obviously in these situations, disease and hunger tore through prisons, killing huge numbers of men and women. In 1941, in Cordova, 502 inmates died behind bars. And this doesn't include the rather Stalinist system of penal colonies, where work was seen as transformative and redemptive, and that ordinary, honest, good Spaniards could be made out of the kind of cosmopolitan, republican malcontents that fell into Franco's hands. 90,000 people were kept in militarized penal colonies, and they were put to work building canals, irrigation projects, and they were also handed out as free slave labour to the landowners, who the latifunder, who had been some of the key backers of Franco. What this does as well is, if you have a large chunk of free labour, aggregate labour prices, wages, if you will, collapse. So poor farmers and peasants in Spain get yet poorer. And of course, much of this suffering was sanctioned and approved of by the Catholic Church. Franco sat with his own personal priest with a pencil and a list of prisoners, and would write up, in the presence of his priest, those to be spared and those to be executed. The view that Orwell had was that Franco was not so much trying to impose fascism on Spain as to restore feudalism, really to take Spain back to the Middle Ages. One of the reasons that Orwell makes this observation, and you may have heard, I must have done it a year or two ago now, a podcast I'd done about a class war and the origins of the Spanish Civil War. And the Spanish Civil War really is a class warfare. It is a war waged by one class, a landowner, ruling militarist class, against the peasants. The Spanish Republic, for all its faults, was an attempt to create a united government to raise living standards and to iron out some of the horrendous inequalities in Spanish life. The Spanish the Spanish generals were the reaction to that, and they were the reaction to social change. They obviously had their own anti-Semitic and racist views and ideas, but unlike Germany, The Jewish population in Spain had long since been deported during the late Middle Ages by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella. And the all fascisms have this narrative of restoration, of trying to restore some kind of mythical golden age. Hitler's Nazism was attempting to racially restore Germany. And whilst there is a clear racial element to Spanish fascism, the attempt to restore some social hierarchy that seems to have, in the eyes of the generals, been eroded is the real game. It's about putting the poor back in their place. And tragically, it succeeded. Now, I hope you've found this interesting and useful, and I'll be adding some more content later in the week. We have got an awesome book giveaway coming up, so stay tuned, and I will catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Do check out our Facebook page. There's always a good chat about history going on there, and it's always great to hear from you, hear your views and all the rest. Take care, all the best, bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.